Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Because I didn't touch him.
Hey! Did you touch my drum set?
Hey, knock it off!
It's always soccer in Philadelphia on a Thursday evening, and how do you feel about the 2-2 draw in Toronto? I'm not surprised, but they could have used 3 points because now they're in third place. Your team, your town, your Philadelphia Union with 50 points in the Eastern Conference behind Nashville with 52 and New England 73. They will go to the playoffs. They'll get it done. We would like to have the number 2 seed, but only time will tell. If we get there, we have two special guests joining the program today. Not one, but two special guests to help us break it all down. It's Luke. It's AJ. Everybody, it's the Doopy Brothers. Welcome in, gentlemen. How you doing?
Thanks for having us. I think it's funny you use the word special. I don't know if that's a compliment or a jab at us, but it's appropriate.
Well, it can be however the listeners want to take it. But I appreciate you guys coming on. You know, this is, I said before the podcast, this is a very ambitious crossover. Nobody has tried this since they did Infinity War a couple years ago, you know. But I appreciate you guys jumping on for sure, because we like to think that the network of Philadelphia Union podcasts is a friendly and amicable network, and that we're all there for each other.
That's definitely true. I'm on a soccer team now with multiple Union podcasters from multiple podcasts. So it's
right.
We're definitely friendly and not enemies.
There you go. It's a strong network. Look, you know, I was saying before we started recording, you know, I saw you guys, I guess, 2 years ago now. I can't believe it was 2 years ago. That's but crazy. Matt Ralph at Brotherly Games set up a pickup game at SoFi. I still don't know what there was no reason. Right. It was just like, hey, let's just get everybody together and play. Right.
Yeah, and then we did like a little like round table podcast of sorts.
Yes.
AJ mainly made up some fun prompts for us to debate. But
yeah, that was
it
fun.
Was a good time.
Yeah. And I remember that game very clearly, because I think within like 2 minutes I got blasted in the face with the ball. And it was like it's like, all right, well, here I am, you know. It's like the first game I had played since my daughter was born. I felt so old and so slow, and I had long hair too back then. I'm not really sure what that was all about, but it was fun. I think one of you nutmegged me. Did one of you nutmeg me?
I'd love to take credit for that one. Yeah. I'll just jump right in there. I take credit whenever I can.
Kevin, I remember you did the like Cuadro Blanco hop with the ball between your legs when we were all feeling a little spicy towards the end of the game. But yeah, I remember that was good.
It was fun, man. There was some techers there, I'm not gonna lie. And Zapata was pulling some moves too, which was kind of crazy, because he told me he was a football player, an American football player, you know, and he was pulling out some stuff too. We were all winded within like 2 minutes, you know, because you know, it's SoFi, you got the boards there, it's not like the ball goes out of bounds so you can't get a breather or anything like that,
right?
So but yeah, that was fun, and we should definitely do it again sometime. I will say for the listeners that if you're ever wondering, the Doopy Brothers can play. You guys can play the game. You guys are good at the game. That goes a long way.
We appreciate that. And right back at you, you were not easy to play against, and I mean that as a compliment.
Well, it took me a while to get warmed up, but I appreciate that for sure. You know, it's hard to play as a center back when you're like in a 10-foot thing with boards around, you know. Right. So listen, on to more important things. You guys are the Doopy Brothers. Do you listen to the band The Doobie Brothers?
I can't name a single song from them.
You can't name a single song.
I'll be honest. When we came up with this name, I in my head pictured the Blues Brothers. I thought that's who we were naming ourselves after, and then I like googled it. I was like, oh shoot, yeah, that's what that was. So there was a lot of confusion in this name, and I feel like that just translated right into the podcast, just being goofy and about as unserious as you could be. So
yeah, That's great though. I didn't think when I thought of it, I was like, well, it's demographically, it doesn't seem to really match up, because I'll be honest, I'll make a confession too. I too cannot name a single Doobie Brothers song, but I can tell you that my dad saw them live in the 70s and he was a Doobie Brothers fan. So if I was really doing my due diligence, I would have talked to him before we recorded this, and I would have known what I was talking about.
He'll be pumped that you're on with us tonight then.
yeah. I'll tell him that it was the real Doobie Brothers.
Yeah.
Not the Doobie Brothers. Then maybe he'll listen. But listen, we're going to get to Toronto in a second. But first, I'm going to give you my Mount Rushmore of brothers, and I'd like for your input on this. I thought this was apropos based on what we were doing tonight. There's a lot of good choices here, but if I had to narrow it down to four, I'd have to go with Peyton and Eli, mm-hmm. right? For sure. Manning cast on Monday night is must watch television. Yeah. I'm a musical dude, so I'm going to give you Alex and Eddie Van Halen. I'm going to put them on the, Billie Eilish didn't know who Van Halen was, by the way. So if she's listening, they're a rock band. I'm going to give you, I'm going to go kind of obscure here, but I think they had great accomplishments on the tennis court. I'm going to give you the Bryan brothers.
Oh yeah.
They were on my list. Yep.
Yeah. You remember Bob and Mike, the double, they won like 47 doubles championships or something like that. Yeah.
Tennis is our other sport. So that, we're
familiar. Okay. Well, there you go. So you know what I'm talking about. And then, for the last one here, you could go in a bunch of different, you go with the Jonas brothers. I could give you the Gallaghers from Oasis. For sure. Hanson. I think they were brothers too. Hanson. Not Scott Hanson, the guy from Red Zone. I'm talking about the singers, Hanson.
Boombox.
Yeah. But for my final one, I'll give you Cain and Abel from the Bible. Yeah, that's a famous brother. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So that's my cut. I think it's a pretty good Mount Rushmore. It's Peyton and Eli. It's Bob and Mike Bryan. It's Alex and Eddie Van Halen. And it's Cain and Abel. Do you guys like, is that a good Mount Rushmore of brothers?
It is good. I'll be honest, I did more research for this than anything I've done for a podcast in a while. I initially thought you were going to start with the Farfans, then go Roldans and Higuaín's as far as MLS type brothers.
Yeah. What about
and
the
Aronsons? I went off the what?
Aronsons.
The Aronsons.
That's what I was first. Come on, guys.
Yeah, good call. Deep cut, Aronson. Yeah.
There's a lot of them. Well, see, if Zeitlin was still doing this podcast, he would definitely go with the Farfans, because he would bring up the third one too. The one that didn't play for the Union. I think like Louis was his name, Louis or something. He would know. There's one episode, there's one like item per podcast where I'd need like Zeitlin to chime in, and he's not here anymore. So you
also got the Wijnaldums, since we had one of them on our team.
The Wijnaldums, man. Yeah.
Yeah, other soccer guys, the Cruises and the DeBars, sports, the Stalls, the Barbers, the Watts. And then I went into movie. Oh, Harbaugh's and the Rex and Bob Ryan's, Gasol. There's like a lot of brothers.
There's so many, man. I was kind of stunned. I'm looking at a list right now. I'm looking at the Hemsworths, Chris and Liam. Apparently there's a third one, Luke, that I didn't even know of. This story also lists the Kims. Kim Jong-un, Kim Jong-nam, and Kim Jong-chul. I didn't know he had brothers. I thought he just had the sister. There's the Stalls in ice hockey. Eric Stahl, Mark Stahl, Jordan Stahl. Markieff Morris and Marcus Morris in the NBA. Owen and Luke Wilson. I mean, we could do an entire podcast.
Yeah.
On this.
Well, okay. So the one that I think that was missed, and I really think we all the Wright brothers, guys. The Wright brothers. That was the only one that I was like, that's a shoo-in.
Yeah, they achieved a little bit more than, say, like, Brooke Lopez and Robin Lopez with his terrible, terrible hook shot in the Eastern Conference quarterfinals last year,
So how many listeners do you think have tuned out by now? Like, we probably crushed your audience right now.
They probably fast-forwarded. At least this is kind of on brand with the podcast. We've always been kind of goofy and fun and relaxed, But it is a serious podcast, too, at the same time. And, look, I always like to toss it to the guest first with a result to a game. I'm not really surprised with 2-2. I think last night they probably played well for maybe 25 minutes of the 90. And so, like, I'm not surprised that they ended up with a 2-2 draw overall. But I don't know. Would you guys go, is that suitable for you guys? Or do you think they should have got 3 points out of that?
I mean, the way the way the night was going, I felt like the first goal was it wasn't just going to be that. Like, I felt like there, it seemed like an MLS was just going to be one of those nights where things were going to go crazy. So I knew the other goals were coming. And they didn't play well enough to win, honestly. After that the 30th, you know, they scored in like the 38th second, like they just sat back and didn't really push for the second goal until late. So I think a draw is fine. I mean, not fine, but it's probably warranted by the performance. It's by the way the game was played. It's a little disappointing seeing the Union performance, but I mean, a tie on the road is what it is.
Now I'm gonna chip in, and I'm gonna use some of the words I've heard you use on your podcast a lot, Kincaid. The goalposts have been moved, so this tie, despite like getting a point on the road, it feels like a loss just because the goalposts are now further out. Our expectations are just higher right now, yeah. And also just with the way the game was played, and we felt like we had a couple chances. You know, Casper's got two clear cut chances that you feel like you should have goals on. I feel like we weren't really exposed in the back that often, where it felt like we were just holding on to a tie, and it felt like a loss more than gaining a point on the road, in my mind.
I think you're probably right with that. And, I just think that the packed nature of the East this year, the margins are just so much smaller. You know, the difference between, one goal difference last night is the difference between second and third place right now. And perhaps could be the difference from two home playoff games versus one home playoff game. You know, so it's so weird because the Revs are so far out ahead right now, and everybody else is so clumped up behind them. It's crazy to look and think that they're in third place and they have 50 points right now, right. And that X still isn't next to their name.
Yeah,
you know, with only two games left, it just shows the nature of what the league has been this year. And like generically, I think, you know, you always talk about like, hey, a draw on the road is good. A draw at home is not good, but like they, for whatever reason, they just haven't really been that good against these non-playoff teams this year. Some crappy results against Miami, Montreal, they probably could have done a better job with, like, you know, that Toronto game. But, like what Luke was saying with the first, you know, the first goal, those are weird because, like, you know, Jim Curtin will always say, you know, goals change games. And it sounds stupid. It sounds vapid. It sounds like it doesn't mean anything, but it does because, you know, it takes you tactically out of what you were doing, you know? So right. Now the Union are content to just sit there and give up 100% of possession while Toronto's all over them, looking like Barcelona for a little bit. And I don't think that they were like kind of, and I don't think the setup, they want to come out in the Christmas tree because they want Gajdog to keep going. You don't want him to, you know, you have his breakout game, right? And you don't want him to like fall off again, right? So you run the Christmas tree out there again. But that was more of a game, I think, last night for Sergio Santos to kind of stretch Toronto, to beat the press, go over the top, to make Michael Bradley work. And after that first goal, they didn't really make Michael Bradley work until the game opened up in the second half. So I don't know. Do you guys agree with that tactically it seemed like it would have been better if they had something that was a little bit more direct, or they could kind of like get over the press and just sort of play direct?
I agree completely. Speed, speed, speed. I wrote that note down as I was like preparing for this. It's like, it's such a simple concept that you see growing up as you coach youth to high school to higher levels. Like sometimes it's just the simplest thing. If you can have speed, you change a game. And especially when you have a defender like Bradley back there, and we exposed Omar Gonzalez when he was on Toronto, just like having a guy who could stretch them like that. And I feel like there's proof of the concept against Toronto specifically, where we've just dominated them with the idea of having a guy who can really push that defense back and make them run towards their own goal. I get the idea of, you know, continuing the Christmas tree and letting guys that try to get on the ball a little more, and they've shown some promise and improvements with their quick passing patterns and stuff. But yeah, I feel like there was a bit of a missed opportunity in that formation.
Yeah. And I also want to say, like, I do like what I'm seeing, obviously, with Gazdag and Montero's chemistry building in this formation. And I think there's promise in that in future games. But yeah, in this one, the way the game went, like they were sitting back and playing the counter, and you can't really counter playing off of, you know, Casper, and that's why, right? Yeah,
yeah. Slowest dude on your team just kind of lumbering around up. It's not like there's much of an outlet up there, you know.
Yeah. And like once they got the ball into the Toronto's third, like things could have happened with Montero and Gazdag, but they so rarely got up there that it just didn't really work out that way.
Yeah, and you know, in the first game against Toronto, Toronto was playing a three-man back line, and one of the observations I've made this year is that the Union have just killed teams that have played three at the back. because they just, you know, they got guys like Bedoya and Flock who for their, you know, attacking their offensive shortcomings. I mean, they understand time and space and when to go and when not to go. And they were just murdering teams of being able to get behind the LCB and the RCB and just kind of attacking those gaps. And, you know, you weren't really able to do that last night because in the Christmas tree, you're pulling two tens back. Neither one of those guys are really runners. So unless, you know, unless one of your shuttlers is going to get forward or the fullbacks are going to bomb forward, like that's not realistic when you're kind of hoofing the ball out of your own half, you know? So, you know, I wish they did a little bit more in trying to play sideways. I don't know. This is going back a little far now, but I don't know if you remember like those games against Red Bull around like 2016, 2017, when they started finally having success against them and started being able to beat the press a little bit more. Chris Pontius would just, he wouldn't even look where he was playing the ball. He would just hoof it to the other side of the field. You know, they played like that blind switch,
right,
you know,
right,
where it's like, I don't even know who's over there, but I know that Red Bull or Toronto or whoever is all clumped up over here. So I'm not even going to pick my head up. I'm just going to blast it to the other side of the field. You know, and right, then you get people moving sideways and stuff like that. They just feel like they weren't really doing that. I think that surprised me too, because they're a team that pressed other teams into oblivion last year. So you think like you kind of know how to play against that, since that's what you did yourself last year. But until the game opened up, I just don't think they did enough to make Toronto work, you know? And so that's why I think it was disappointing to me, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like there's always a moment where we have these tie games where the Union kick it into gear, but it's usually like 85th minute and you're like, oh, okay, now they're going for it. I feel like they started that kind of push a little bit earlier. And I was like, oh, that's kind of positive. Like, let me try to drag some positivity out of this. But I don't know if that was just a nature of, holy crap, we're tied against Toronto. We need to continue to find another goal and we didn't get it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Do you wish, let me ask this. I feel like Jim, one of the biggest things that I think he improved on last year when they won the Shield was I think he was like more aggressive with his subs or trusted his bench a little bit more. And this year, I feel like he's kind of regressed to the point where he, like, the subs are coming late and they're not as impactful maybe as they used to be. It's like, you know, they never do anything before 65 minutes, you know, and I would just kill to see him make like a halftime change or something more impactful in that. Am I like off base in saying that, or is that legit?
No, I agree with that. But I also think part of that is our bench feels a little weaker this year with like previous years we had like Ilsenio was like, you know, the super sub. Fontana had times where he was pretty reliable off the bench. And I feel like with like injuries and so many young guys that like maybe he's just less reluctant to rely on, you know, Paxton Aronson and Quinn Sullivan every game when they need a goal or need to change some stuff. So
yeah,
I definitely agree with that. But yeah, I think part of it has to be with his options on the bench.
Yeah, and they can't really switch into. I think I mentioned this on the podcast a bunch of times on the post game show on the Gambler too. They can't. You know, when Jim Singles, he would just switch out of the diamond and they go 4-2-3-1. You know, they go mm-hmm. back to their bread and butter from a couple of years ago, but they don't have wingers anymore.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like there literally are a grand total of zero. Well, Ilsenio, but behind him, there's zero wingers on the field. So last year you could throw Aronson back there. You know, 2 years ago you had Fafa Pico, and you could throw Alejandro Bedoya over there if you had to. But I think the one thing that they can do now, stumbling into this kind of with the Christmas tree thing, is that they can get out of that and go go from Christmas tree to diamond in a game, you know, make that like their in-game switch, you know, come out of the formation. Because, you know, Tansy and I were talking about this on the post-game show last night. It's like, you know, you play against Cincy, do you play Christmas tree, do you play Santos on Sunday? And I'm thinking, well, you know, you could probably start. It's, but my rationale is like, I think it's easier to start in Christmas tree and then get out to 4-4-2 and let Sergio run versus starting with Sergio and letting him run and then bring it on Gosh Dog and go in Christmas tree. Cause I think one of those changes the game and opens the game up. And I think the other one kind of collapses the game. So right. If you're going to do it in order of what's most impactful, like the way I would do it is I would open with Christmas tree and then go Santos 4-4-2 if you had to.
Yeah, I would agree. Like, yeah, moving space forward. Yeah, making that adjustment is definitely easier than trying to close it down backwards. I hope against Cincinnati. I mean, I hope they come out ready to just attack. I mean, you figure you've got to come out in something. We're going to really push the issue. I mean, it's also the last home game, you know, home game without playoffs.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys are gamblers, if you put any money on MLS, but I put like 20 bucks on Nashville at the start of the game last night, and they were down like 3-1 within like 20 minutes or whatever. And then like I look up and it's like 4-3, 5-3, 6-3. Yeah. it was never in doubt, was it? You know, like I love Harris Madunian more than anything. Like I could watch him just hit passes all day long, but when I see him in the starting lineup, I'm like, I know that they're going to give up goals. And sure enough, I'm watching the highlights and he's pointing at this guy.
I think Matt posted a video showing Harris pointing at the top of his own box, and sure enough, a goal comes from it. It's just brilliant.
He's like, why aren't you covering this guy? Why aren't you? Because motherfucker, that's your guy. That's a guy you're supposed to get. There was a play in the New York in 2018, the New York City playoff game, I think it was, or like the game that they went up there at the end of the regular season to try to like get home field, and they lost, and so they had to go right back up to Yankee Stadium or whatever.
Oh yeah.
Where he just watched a ball go over his head on a throw, and he's pointing to Mark McKenzie. It was like a first year player at the time. McKenzie's already marking somebody. He's trying to like pass off the second guy onto him. Like, here, you take him in addition to this. You know, it's like, I always wondered if, I've always thought it'd be cool if they played some kind of like, you know, put like three center backs behind him and let him play kind of like the Pirlo role, like what they did with Juventus, where it's like you just protect him and he doesn't have to defend at all. But I don't think Cincinnati's center backs are like Chiellini and Bonucci and
maybe nowadays. Chiellini out there.
they could sign him if they wanted to, but I would agree with that. Like, you know, since he's going to give up goals, like I would just come right at him.
Yeah.
On Sunday and try to attack him and try to put it away early. Like, surely that's got to be the way to approach it, right?
And I also feel like there's a little extra, since we just played Nashville and then Nashville plays Cincinnati and we're coming into Cincinnati, or having Cincinnati come to us. I feel like there's got to be a little bit of a chip, like we have to do as good as Nashville did against Cincinnati, just to show that like we are still the class of the East. Like, there's got to be a little something like there.
And when we played Cincinnati last, we won, it was like 2-1 or something, but it wasn't very convincing. So I'd like to see them really just demolish them and show that we can beat bad teams. And I feel like you made this point kind of early with about the Toronto game. Like, we kind of play down against these lower teams.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice to just really, really beat them and they just take care of business.
Yeah, and go into the playoffs with some kind of momentum, because I feel like, you know, the story is kind of different this year, but, you know, in years past, you know, Jim's teams hadn't really played well in September and October. You know, they'd string together like that, like stretch of like 3 or 4 wins in a row in July, and you'd be like, where the hell did that come from? You know, and then they kind of like, you know, peter out later. So it'd be nice for them to go on a roll and do that. Let me just read through a couple of, it was actually like a kind of a crazy game last night with some like random stuff in it. It's just some notes here, and you guys react to pick whatever you want to react to here. Shabilko on the first goal that they gave up. Jack Elliott makes a clearance, and then I don't know what the hell he's doing, trying to like backheel it or flick it out of there.
Yeah.
Just hack it. And I get, you know, it's funny, because I hate, one of the things I hate more than anything is when you give up a goal and the goalkeeper comes out, or you're not even giving up a goal, but the keeper has to like make a save, you give up a corner, and the keeper comes out and goes like apoplectic and is like yelling at people and pointing at people. And sometimes I feel like saying, it's just like, shut the fuck up and do your job. Like, we're trying out here. Like, just let us try to like do it, you know? But he was but Matt Freeze was totally justified on that. Cause I don't know. Shabilko's like, look, he's like a veteran. Like, you don't expect much of strikers back there, but,
yeah,
and just hack it out of there, you know?
Yeah, the defender read that the entire way. Like, he knew exactly what Shabilko was doing and saw the guy he was trying to play to, and just cleaned it right up. And yeah, it was just stupid and frustrating.
And I think, if I remember that correctly, then the ball came back in after that, and Elliott cleared it again, but it like went right into somebody.
Yeah.
And bounced right out the door.
Yeah. And
I was just going to say, I wonder if there's a bigger... Why is Casper the tip of our Christmas tree at the top of our 18? Like, is there something else that can be? And like, I don't know if it's like a compliment to him, like, hey, way to be a striker who checks back, like, in defense. Yeah. And we like that about you. But at the same time, if that's the highest player that we're supposed to have and he's in our 18, have we already fallen apart at that point.
Yeah, well, who's why is he the guy clearing out of the
what,
box?
And what if
yeah.
what if that little flick comes off to Montero, and then Montero's bringing the ball forward to what?
To who?
Right. To who? Like, for who, for what? I'm Chris Long, you know? But yeah, because there's nobody else up there. I know, like, Jim likes his strikers to do a lot of defensive work, but he's the only striker up there. He shouldn't have to be back that far. If you have Jamiro and Gajdak, who are both back there, who are defending, drives me crazy. I felt bad for Jack Elliott because he played another great game. I felt like there was like four balls that he cleared that like just hit some dude like right in the chest and just bounced right back to him. But on the second goal that they gave up, it was weird because there should have been a whistle, first of all, for a high boot that was near Shabilko's face. And then he puts his hand up. Everybody kind of freezes for a half second, right? Mm-hmm. Then the ball comes in. Elliott clears it. It hits some dude again. They think it's a handball. And so they put their hand up and they freeze for a half second. And then Baizo kind of falls asleep there. Just for like that split second there. Ball comes in and Schaffelberg finally makes the right decision, finally puts a good ball in. And I was saying on the post-game show, there's nothing Elliott can do there. He's got to slide there. He's got to lunge for that. Cause if not, Josie has a tap in, but I don't know. I mean, that whole sequence for me left a lot to be desired.
Yeah. We all play defense. We've all made that same play. I mean, not to put words in your guys' mouths, but I've had my fair share of,
I've knocked a few fumbles in my day. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's not much you can do. He's got longer legs than anyone else on the field, so he's the only one who makes that play to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, obviously. And my take was like, after the Minnesota game, they gave up the three crappy goals. I thought it was an aberration because it's like you get it all out of your system and whatever. But you're not concerned after the two goals they gave up last night. You're not concerned that's coming back, are you?
I don't know. I mean, I felt so confident about our back line and Blake, even though he wasn't in this game, I felt so confident about our defense this whole year. So I still feel relatively confident about these guys. I mean, we have like Elliott and Gleznes are so solid and they feel like they've even taken a step up this year and been great. So I can't imagine it's really going to be an issue. And maybe it's just I'm more concerned about just road games. I feel like it's all happened on road games. So I think that's more of a concern in my mind.
Yeah. Well, if they get Nashville in the second round, I mean, it's probably going to be another scrappy, sloppy, boring 1-0. I say boring, but it's like, I don't know. I feel like Union fans can appreciate like that they're a good defensive team, but mm-hmm. I don't think. And Matt Doyle, I think, said this when I had him on like a month or two ago or whatever that was. He said that this Union team isn't as fun to watch as others in the past. And like, I see you guys nodding. Like, I would agree with that too, because they just don't. I mean, if I play center back my entire life, D-mid my entire life, so I can appreciate what they're doing defensively, but it doesn't make it like super pleasing on the eye. Like, Jose Mourinho's teams were not like known for playing beautiful football,
Yeah.
So it was just,
On our podcast last night, we said we recorded last night right after the game, and we literally said the same thing, like, not to diss the Union, but the Nashville game. It was just a blue collar. We won our battles and got out of there 1-0. Like,
and we were happy with it. We were like fine with it. It was a nice performance.
Final thought that I have, and then I think there was an exercise that you wanted to do before we wrap this thing up here. So a lot of people are asking about the penalty the no call on the penalty, the shot that comes in at the end there, hits Michael Bradley in the body and then it hits his hand. The arm is out in an unnatural position. So by letter of the law, it should be a penalty. However, there's a provision in there that says if it strikes the guy in the face or in the body, in the head or the body before it hits his hand, it's not a penalty. So their judgment was that he, blocked the ball with his body and therefore whatever happens, after that is not, relevant. But it's not a common thing. I don't think, cause Jim, I think, said afterwards, he wanted an explanation of what was going on with that. And the ref did give the explanation to the pool reporter. But I think you guys know, like, I hate penalties in general. I hate the games are decided on like bullshit like that. So I'm fine with the rule being that way. But I don't know if you guys feel that same way or not.
I'm relatively fine with that too, but I also like, I didn't see it really hit his body. Like, I know that the angles we got maybe weren't as clear and maybe I missed something, but like, I saw it clearly hit his hand. There was like a body in the angle that we got on camera, but I didn't see it clearly hit his body as much. So that's where like I kind of got hung up on
the back angle that they were showing. It kind of, there's somebody in the way.
Yeah.
Or you couldn't, yeah, you couldn't really see that first contact that kind of came in low. And like, you know, the, obviously it's like the Toronto broadcast. You don't have the benefit of like JP and Danny being up there. It's not like you got any other like resources to do it. So I guess we're just kind of stuck, you know? I just hate in general. I, you know, even if the Union had won on that, I don't like when the Union win or lose on that, you know, because I think it's, there's too much that goes into it, and these guys busting their asses for 90 minutes and playing their butts off and stuff like that for a game to be decided on some kind of split second, bang, bang, ball hits me in the like oblique and then like bounces off my hand. You know, like I don't think guys should have to, I don't think like big games should be decided by that. So that's just always been the theory. I would love to see an indirect free kick there. It's like the most exciting player. It's like when Michael Farfan scored from like two yards out against.
Let's just make that happen.
Chivas and just like roofed it or whatever, you know. So I told you before we started recording, I had the shitty Zoom. So it only records for like 40 minutes. So I'm looking at it. At least it gives you a timer.
Yeah,
now on the top. Yeah, because I didn't, like the first time I did this, when I was recording with Jim a while ago, it just like all of a sudden said, you're out of time. I was like, oh shit, like, you know, I'm going to like lose this thing or whatever, but it like kept going. So now I'm looking at it up here. It says 5:42 left. So I think there was an exercise you wanted to do about reality television.
Oh yeah. So Luke hates this idea. So I'm all over this. So just based on a couple things, your favorite topic, Ben Simmons, and then also Charlotte FC coming in next year.
you see Ben Simmons got the, he's got the NFT avatar now on his, Jonah Bolden got him into the, whatever the fuck it's called, the gutter cat gang or something or other. I'm like Clint Eastwood and Gran Torino trying to talk about like NFTs on Crossing Broad, you know, but that's another story for another time. I digress.
You lost me there.
Exactly. That's the whole point. Yeah.
So Charlotte FC is coming in next year to the, to MLS, and they have a reality TV show getting guys from around the world to come try out and be part of the Charlotte FC club. And so between the Ben Simmons and that, I wanted to mesh it, and I wanted to throw this your way, as you're pretty tied into the Philly sports scene, to have you propose some activities for a Philly sports athlete reality TV show. So if there was a mental test that an athlete had to pass, I have a couple, three things I'm going to throw them at you and see if you can like come up with the activity. So what would be a good mental test that a Philly athlete would have to pass in order to,
he'd have to play for the Sixers, and they would, Doc Rivers would be his coach, and they'd blow a 20-point lead in the fourth quarter, and the fans would just boo the ever living crap out of him. And if mentally he can take it, then he's on the team.
Well, awesome. a travel very challenge. Real. So truth. I'm in Virginia. You both are up there. What's, where'd be the worst part of, the area to start at to get to the city that like an athlete would be like, I'm starting here and I gotta get to Broad Street? What would they have to get through to show their Philly worthiness?
There's a lot of good candidates for this one, but you could still, it took me like 90 minutes to get to the Sixers game the other day down the Blue Route. There was an accident on 95 that was backing us all the way up to Villanova. But I gotta go with the Schuylkill Expressway. I think if I got back all of the time that I spent on the Schuylkill Expressway in my entire life, I would be 36 years old instead of 37.
I'm learning that is my commute every day, and it is.
You commute down the Schuylkill.
yep. The city out the way, and I will still note that Northern Virginia traffic on 95 is
terrible.
Still worse.
Absolutely it's, terrible. Yeah. Nova traffic is very. And DC, too, like when you get up on the Beltway there, I've spent a lot of time sitting on that. I do not wish any of that on. On my worst enemy at all.
Yeah. And that was my previous year.
Solid shout out to the Nova. All right.
Sounds like a harrowing experience for the reality show contestant. Yeah.
All right. Last competition for contestants. Give me something with a cheesesteak. I wanted something like a cheesesteak challenge.
You gotta run up the rocky stairs and you gotta shove a cheesesteak in your mouth as fast as possible. And then you gotta run to Boathouse Row, and then you gotta go to the Liberty Bell. And then Chris Collinsworth will mention all three of those Philly icons on Sunday Night Football. Because apparently there's nothing else that exists in Philadelphia, right?
That's it.
That you get the same shot. You get the same like bump out shot to commercial every time. It's like the dude chopping up the cheesesteak, right? And like, here's the Liberty Bell at dark, you know? And then they do like, you know, here's like the art museum. Here's like the Rocky statue. So it's like when Chris Heck from the Sixers dared say New Philadelphia 2 years or whatever, everybody got like super offended because they're like, well, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. You're like some mainline dude or whatever. It's actually from Delaware. So, but I honestly, I think that's a great reality show. Harrowing is the word I keep coming back to. It'd be very difficult.
I'm glad you leaned into it. The only other thing was I was going to try to throw in words that end in A somewhere in there, but I couldn't figure out a way to.
It may be. Well, listen, we're down to 1 minute. I think a lot of listeners would prefer that we don't do that one, but I'll give you one really quick. He was an Argentinian midfielder who played for the Union in 2014 and 2015.
Oof. Oh, God. I don't know.
First name, Christian.
Madonna.
Yeah. Who apparently was up with his kids really late at night, and that's why he didn't play very well, according to John Hackworth. So there's a story I forgot to tell. I will tell it later, maybe on another episode or something, since we're running out of time. AJ, Luke, I appreciate it, man. The Doopie Brothers, you guys can follow them on Twitter at Doopie Brothers. Listen to their podcast. Find out Brotherly Game, find on Apple Podcasts, find on everything. I got that right. Everything's right.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, you got it right. We appreciate you, Kevin.
Thanks for coming on, and we'll get you guys on again sometime. And I'll get the not shitty Zoom so we can record longer next time.
Right on. Later, man.